very happy to introduce my next guest. Very gracious to come on. It's talk to this audience down here in Southwest Alabama from Pike Road, right outside of Montgomery. Our friend, State Senator Will Barfoot, on the line. Senator Barfoot, how are you?
Man, I am. I'm gonna make it. I think, like a lot of the other people across the state, especially here in South Alabama, the pollen issue is really killing me today. I've got the headaches and the sore throat and the seems like I've got a basketball on my neck. My glands are swollen, so we'll tough it out, and get through it though. So I hate taking any types of medicine. If I can avoid it, I try to, and we'll see how long this lasts. But I'm here.
I hear you on that stuff. It wreaks havoc on my sinuses as well. But hopefully you get through it. Well, let's talk about that. You guys get back today. You're obviously there in Montgomery, but so far it seems this first month and some change, the COVID really hasn't impact. I mean, obviously there's some protocols you have to go through. There are inconveniences, but it hasn't really disrupted the calendar too much.
No, I'm thankful for that. You know, there were several members in the Senate and in the House as well. I think, you know, over the past 6, 8, 10 months, maybe it contracted it, but we've been pretty fortunate. I think that it hadn't run rampant, at least while we've been back in session. And, you know, that's a testament, I guess, to, you know, testing that's being done, started by the president, and, the vaccine that the president, you know, warp speed and kind of got that out there. And so just, you know, President Trump did a great job of pushing that issue. You know, can you imagine if President Trump hadn't been in charge, you know, where we would be now? I think it'd be a lot different situation. So just thankful for that. We've been able to pretty much conduct business as usual. Of course, some precautions that have been added at the State House and walking through thermometers or testing, fever testing centers, I guess. Make sure you're not coming in with a spike temperature. And of course,
it seems like with the Capitol opening up and the governor's mansion for tours on a couple of days a week, like it normally does, the State House, maybe not that far behind.
Yeah, let's hope so. You know, I know folks all across the nation, specifically here in Alabama, we're ready to get back to work doing, you know, get back to normal, I guess. That's the new word, normal. So, normal.
Yeah, as long as it's not a new normal, but getting back to a sense of normalcy, people would be all right with.
Yep, that's it, man. You know, and the more and more I'm a Baptist with maybe some Presbyterian leanings, that, you know, I'm cautious, and, you know, but I think most people are not afraid, but respect, you know, certainly the tragedies we've seen across the state, number of people who have been affected and died and lost loved ones. That's nothing to sneeze at. But I think, you know, with the vaccines that are out there now and the information that we have, folks are ready to get back to pre-pandemic type activities. So,
Senator, wanted to get you on here. It seems like it's just kind of, it goes on and on, but the comprehensive gaming proposal, you and a few other your Republican colleagues were no votes. You and maybe some of y'all were seeing as the difference in getting to that 3/5 majority needed for a constitutional amendment. We had colleague Clyde Chambliss on yesterday explaining why he opposed it. But you're not necessarily ideologically opposed to gambling. It's just this bill just didn't meet the smell test in your view. Do you think that's an accurate way to assess things?
Well, let me say this. So you won't see me on the State House steps advocating for gaming. I'm not the guy who says we got to have it under any circumstance and all circumstances. But you know, I was not a no from the beginning. From the standpoint, I do think that, you know, if you have a palatable piece of legislation, it will never be perfect, but a palatable piece of legislation, give the folks an opportunity to vote on. I think, you know, that's certainly something I could do. So my opposition this past Tuesday was, you know, more procedurally than I was on the merits. I wasn't a no vote based on the merits, although I think myself, like many other senators, even some of the yes, had some concerns, understanding and knowing that if it, you know, got that 21 votes, three-fifths out of the Senate, it would move to the House where they would continue to shape it, mold it, modify it, and, you know, maybe cut out some things or add to it. But my no vote on Tuesday was, you know, the constitutional amendment, as you know, based Constitution of Alabama based 1901 Constitution says it's a prohibition against games of chance. And that's been amended some 18, 19 several times. Local legislation that allows bingo facilities around the state, other local county organizations to conduct, you know, certain types of gaming. But that constitutional amendment referenced many times, multiple places, general law. And that's not existing general law that it referenced. It was general law pertaining to legislation that had just been filed on Tuesday. You know, in my opinion, a yes vote on that on Tuesday, a constitutional amendment that referenced law that we had not discussed or debated or even passed in the Senate, would be akin to, you know, we throw bombs at the Democrats in Washington, kind of the, you know, well, let's pass it and then we'll know what's in there. And I think, you know, it's the proverbial cart before the horse. That's what happened Tuesday. And had that enabling legislation that required only a majority, a simple majority, had that been up for debate first, the finer points of how that would be the lottery, sports wagering, casino-style gaming, had that been debated, decided, and passed first in the Senate, you might have seen a different vote on the constitutional amendment. You know, I don't think it's dead. You know, I guess it was Mark Twain, you know, the rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated. I think that's probably true with the gaming legislation, whether it be this later this session or maybe in a special. I think you'll see it again. And, you know, there'll be an opportunity. I think, you know, ultimately, if it were in a special where you can kind of isolate that issue and have everyone focused on how to make that potential legislation better, something to send to the people to maybe vote on. I think that's probably the better way of going about it. But again, you know, voting on a constitutional amendment with references to general law that we hadn't discussed or debated or even passed, I think that's a faulty error.
So. Yeah, because a lot of people may not understand this, that, you know, you want to use the constitutional amendment process to just kind of open the door and make something constitutional. But what this was doing, it was putting, like, the law, the enabling legislation was becoming kind of part of that amendment, which is not maybe not the best way to go about it.
Yeah, you know, when you have a constitutional amendment, although I just referenced 18, 19 times as it relates to gaming, the Constitution has been changed since 1901. But, you know, the constitutional amendment's a very tough piece of legislation to pass. I mean, it takes a three-fifths majority in both houses, and then the people of the state have to vote on it. So once you get something out there, when it's passed, you know, it is difficult to change. And I suspect that, you know, this constitutional amendment, should it pass in the future, will be difficult to change. But again, I go back to the enabling part, the general law, or the finer details of that, how that constitutional amendment would be implemented. I just think, you know, it's certainly better to debate and pass, if we can, that before we would address the CA. So, you know, when you're debating the CA, what those references to general law mean, because you've already at that point debated and potentially passed it. So,
right, and then the references to general law when the law doesn't exist, to make it, like you said, sort of like what Republicans deemed Nancy Pelosi for during the Affordable Care Act debate. We had to pass it to know what's in it.
That's that was my point, and I think, you know, there might have been some other folks in the Senate that kind of felt the same way. Again, it's an issue that I'm sure we'll see again, and given the right set of circumstances, and you know, after we debate those finer details of the implementing legislation, maybe it's a constitutional amendment that we'll be able to send to the House and see what they do with it.
Well, it's something it sounds to me like you're not necessarily opposed to. You're just opposed to the procedural means to getting there, that if you split these up, and then maybe later on, be it later in this session or some speculation about a special session, that your no vote could be a yes vote?
It should be, and that depends. You know, words matter, commas matter, and I look through that, you know, from a lawyer's lens, that you know, there was, for instance, a section in the constitutional amendment that I was supportive of that gave agriculture the first $15 million of any unclaimed prize money as it related to the lottery for agricultural grants. I think that's a great provision. The agricultural, you know, throughout the state is a very important component of our state's economy, and come from a family of farmers, at least part-time farmers. But that wording in the CA just simply said the first $15 million. Well, I, as a lawyer, look at that. If that passes, and it didn't say the first $15 million of each calendar year, it didn't say the first $15 million of each cycle. And so, looking through a lawyer's lens, to me, if the first $15 million were paid, that you could certainly make an argument that there's no more money for ag grants as it relates to any unclaimed prize money. And I think, you know, that's one of the details that I think is important. And if you're gonna have this a comprehensive bill to put for the people to vote on, I think you've got to make sure that that your I's are dotted, your T's are crossed, and you know, that's just an example.
So. Joined by State Senator Will Barfoot for just a couple more minutes here before we have to let him go. A senator, also wanted to get to your bill, our effort to get the legislature some power to call itself into a special session. I'm assuming your bill is a lot like Representative Becky Norgren's bill. It's a high threshold. It takes a joint proclamation of the pro tem and of the speaker. And then once you get to that, then I assume you got like a three-quarter supermajority or something of that sort to proceed.
That's right. As a matter of fact, Representative Norgren's bill was filed first, and I contacted her and said, "Hey, I like what you're doing. I like the bill. Would you mind if I cut and paste and, you know, introduced as a Senate bill?" That was done, passed government affairs, I believe, unanimously, and it's in a position to be voted on at the appropriate time on the Senate floor. And that bill, you know, is a CA also, would give the people of the state the right to vote on that. There are some protections there, as you said. It's not just by fiat that the speaker or the pro tem can call us back in willy-nilly. It would take a joint resolution of both the speaker and the pro tem. And then once the House and the Senate are back in Montgomery at the State House, it would take a two-thirds majority to conduct business. And if either House failed to get that two-thirds majority on any on the call back into special session, then we'd go home. So there's a protection there from a runaway legislature where, you know, you've got being called back in multiple times a year on different issues. I think that's an important part of it. And then secondly, it's not a knock against the governor. The governor still has, whoever, you know, Governor Ivey or whoever future governors would still have the ability under the Constitution to call us back in for a special, and as the governor's office does now. You know, if you look around the nation, though, Jeff, you know, you can look at a lot of different governors, California, Michigan, New York. I mean, it's just pandemonium what's happened there. And this is not a look back or a dissent to what Governor Ivey's done, but rather being proactive to where, you know, the next governor or five governors from now or 50 years from now, what happens? And, you know, if we have one of those governors like in the states I mentioned, where it just is a complete lockdown, no regard for liberty, and it would allow the legislature to weigh in on specific issues. And we don't have that authority now, and I think that's something that we should have, again, with those protections against a runaway legislature. So we'll see where that bill goes. I'm hopeful. I think, you know, within the Senate, the Republican caucus is pretty fired up about it, so we'll see.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but we do appreciate your time this morning, and let's talk again real soon.
I always enjoy it, Jeff, and thank you for the opportunity. You can call me anytime.
Thank you. That was State Senator Will Barfoot making time for us this morning.